Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. And it is 25 years of Morning Glory, and there's loads of new Oasis news to cover. So yeah, that's what we're mainly doing today, is covering the Oasis news. And I'll be talking to our good friend and regular collaborator, Richard Bowes, about that later. But we're going to start the episode off with someone who is making some of that Oasis news, which is Andrew Cushion. Andrew, you may have known as a young singer-songwriter, and is working with Noel Gallagher, and his new single, Where Have My Family Gone, featuring Noel Gallagher, is, by the time you're hearing it, it will be out and able to listen to. And yeah, really good, really interesting tune, and it's a fascinating story with Andrew. So we'll catch up with the rest of the news in a bit, but for now, here is me talking with Andrew Cushion.
And I just can't wait for the summer sun to come down, take away what I've done. But there's still hope in me, and I hope that you can see it's gonna get better.
Welcome to the Oasis Podcast, Andrew Cushion. How are you doing?
I'm fine, mate. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm very good. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right, thank you. It's an exciting week for you with your new single coming out.
Yeah, massively, man. It comes out on Friday morning. So it'll be virtually midnight on the Thursday. But no, it's a big tune. I'm hoping it does quite well.
Yeah, let's hope so. So this is one that we've heard before on the... on the This Feeling TV version, but it's very, very different. Now, this has got, when, because the little snippet dropped yesterday, and I was like, is this an old Gallagher song from Chasing Yesterday? It's got such huge production value, when the other stuff you've done to this so far has been really good, but it's been very, you know, acoustic and voice driven, whereas this sounds massive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, man. It's funny because I think a lot of people that have listened to Where's My Family Gone from the This Feeling video that's on YouTube, I think people are going to get a bit of a shock listening to this one. It's got Noel written all over it, which I'm pleased about. The production value is absolutely huge. We had some top musicians play on it, and I'm just really, really impressed at how it's came out.
Yeah, that's pretty magic. Well, let's take it back a little bit. So you're at 20.
Yeah, mate, I'm 20.
That's crazy, man. It's really cool. There's this new generation. It feels like there's a new generation now of singer-songwriters. Not so much bands, actually. It's weird. Was there a, like, Were you not tempted to like go and do this as a band, or did you always want to do it in your own name?
Well, when I first started getting into music, I got into music when I was quite young, but I didn't play the guitar or anything until I was about 16, 17. And I did my first gig when I was 18. So there was a time around then when I was doing covers gigs and stuff like that, when I was kind of want to get a band together, do you know what I mean? But the more I was writing, and I thought myself, I'm writing some half-decent songs here. I didn't want to, and it's quite a ignorant thing to say, I suppose, but I didn't want to waste them on the band, do you know what I mean?
Got you.
So I didn't want, say if I was to do a band thing, it would be semi so successful or whatever, and release them songs that I'd written. If I was ever a backup plan for me and I wanted to go sort of solo or anything 5-6 years down the line, you know, them songs would be the band's songs, do you know what I mean? They wouldn't be seen as mine. So I suppose it was just the more I was writing, I was kind of thinking, no, it's got to be about me, really.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is quite arrogant, but hey-ho.
No. It's very interesting. It's just different, man. You know, like I don't know if you know, there's a guy called Pete McLeod, but he came through and did some stuff with Bonehead and things. He's a really good singer-songwriter.
Yeah, I know Pete. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. What's that song? Rolling Stone or something else.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's called something like that. Yeah, he done that song with Bonehead. It's a good tune, man.
Yeah, no, he's great. But it's one of those things that I think when he came through, everyone was in bands and he was like solo artist. Whereas now it feels like all of the big, like even the big people that come through, like Lewis Capaldi and stuff, and Sam Fender, it tends to be Declan McKenna. It's all solo artists now. You know what I mean? 10-15 years ago, these would all be bands starting with the. But now, I don't know, it's weird. I don't know what the reason is. Maybe it's people can't make money from music now, so they've just got to do it themselves, and they don't have to split the money five ways.
Well, that's it. And I suppose if you're getting paid 100 grand, that's 5 years, whatever, do you know what I mean? But I think, so obviously, all the artists that you've named there, so Capaldi's got a band, Sam Fender's got a band and stuff, but I think it's, obviously, they're all seen as solo artists, aren't they? Which I think is probably the way forward, actually, because then you're going to see an act. You're going to see one person, like you go to see Sam Fender and you just say, I'm going to see Sam, but you're actually getting the band experience. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think you get the best of both worlds now. Whereas, I mean, there's loads of bands that I love, but I might only be able to name the lead singer. Do you know what I mean?
Got you. So what's the, obviously you did these couple of singles that came out before. So when does, which sort of did quite well, and when does Noel then come on the scene?
So Noel was actually on the scene prior to these being made. That, We sat down with the record label, which Noel put in touch with, by the way. I've got to give him massive credit for that as well. And the biggest thing for me was I hadn't done very many gigs. I was only 19 at the time. I was incredibly naive about going into studios and stuff like that. And they said, right, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to put you onto an independent record label for the next two releases. In your next job for the next 12 months or whatever it was, is to go record two tracks in this time next year, which comes to about the time that we're in now. You're just going to try and build a bit of a following in Newcastle. And that was the whole aim. It was just get two songs out so that people can understand how you sing, what you sing about, and let's hope that we can get you a couple of fans. And that slowly started to happen, to be fair. We've got a half-decent following now, especially in the East End of Newcastle.
I don't want a heartache, I don't want to light my stuff. Oh no, I'm hanging by the fire, the flames are rising higher. I'm waiting for the rain. I'm hanging by the fire, the flames are rising higher. Waiting for the rain, you know.
And then obviously the Noel thing came about. Noel was interested to do a song with her. I certainly was never in a million years going to refuse that opportunity. and we just got the ball rolling with it. But I mean, an absolute top bloke for doing what he's done. Like he's given me, and I was fortunate enough to say this to him, he's given me the opportunity now to change my life, which I'll forever be grateful to him for.
Yeah, but how did he even hear of you in the first place or something?
So a lad who manages me called Lee, he worked for British Airlines, God, about 14, 15, maybe 16 years ago now, and he was based in Heathrow in London, and Oasis came through the terminal one day, and Noel Gallagher's guitar went missing on one of the flights. So, fortunately, my manager found the guitar, sent it to Noel first class, and he stayed in touch with all ever since then. And I mean, they've texted ever since, you know what I mean? When sort of Newcastle play Man City and stuff like that, they'll send a little text or whatever. And my manager came to my second ever gig. He was a pal of mine. I didn't necessarily see him as a manager or anything. He was just a friend that I used to coach football with. And he took a video of Waiting for the Rain. I think it was the first time that I'd played it at a proper gig. And I came off and he was like, well, whose song's this? And I said, no, I wrote it. And he was kind of baffled as to how I'd wrote a song. And a couple of days later, I sent it to Noel. And to everybody's amazement, Noel got back in touch and said it was half decent. And asked if I had anything else, which gave me a little bit of a kick up the backside to go and get some demos done. So I got them done. We sent them to Noel. And then he said, listen, I've got a lad who might be interested in you, who was a man called Ted, who was at Virgin AMI. So we got invited down for an interview and played them a couple of tracks. And 12 months later, here we are. It's been quite an amazing whirlwind of a story. But at the same time, I haven't really had time to sit back and reflect on anything that's happened. Do you know what I mean? Which I'm quite pleased about, because it's just letting me just sit back and write loads of songs. And I think we're so busy now, even in lockdown. Do you know what I mean? Just doing stuff like this, podcasts and stuff every day. And
yeah,
there's always emails to answer and photo shoots to go on. But we'll always find something to keep occupied. But it's been an amazing 12, 18 month. Absolutely amazing.
So are you like, what would you be doing now? Would you be like going to uni or like something like that at the moment? Or is this is now a full-time thing?
Oh, Well, it's a full-time job now for me. When we signed the first deal with the label, I was fortunate enough to quit work and stuff. But so at that time, I was actually planning to be a PE teacher,
wow,
which is a ludicrous idea of me standing and teaching kids. So that got knocked on the head. I was also doing a little bit of tarmacking, which was dreadful as well, coming in the house stinking of diesel. So I'm definitely doing things that I enjoy more now. But I think I'd probably, if I was going down the PE teacher route, I'd have to do a god-awful degree at some point in my life, wouldn't I? So probably be doing that now.
Yeah, much better to be a rock and roll star, eh?
Well, not yet. We're trying to be.
And what about the actual process of writing and recording this tune with Noel? How did that come about?
So this song was written, for about at least 6 months, I'd say, prior to getting in the studio and all. And it was, in the version that was written, was what I played on This Feeling TV. So when I played This Feeling TV, the song had actually only been written for probably about 3-4 weeks. And I actually went into the record label, called into Virgin on the morning of that day and played President of Virgin the new song, and everyone was like, yeah, it's great. So we always knew that was going to be the next song to get recorded.
But I can't take much more of this. You know, and it's gonna take more than this, for sure. And I want to know,
but when we got in the studio and all, we had to make it radio friendly. So the problem with the way that I played it on This Feeling TV was it was just a little bit too slow, and it's right, a little bit too it's a little bit too lethargic. It's still got nice poetic lyrics, as I like to say, but it hasn't got that much of a hook. Do you know what I mean? Other than that big chorus, there's not a lot of a hook through it. So we sat down with Noel and we said, right, okay, we're going to need to get upbeat drums. We're going to need to get a nice groovy bass going. Noel done an amazing Oasis-like guitar solo in the middle eight, which is just absolutely amazing. I can't wait for everybody to hear that. We added another chorus. We just extended the chorus a bit, and it's turned into now, it's definitely, I'd say it's an anthem. Do you know what I mean? I've got a band now. Similar to sort of how Capaldi works and Declan, kind of know that it's like a supporting band, you know what I mean? But when we rehearse that song live now, it's so much bigger than how the song sounded sort of 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But the whole production on the song is absolutely amazing. I mean, we had a lad called Jeremy Stacey drum on it.
Yeah, of course.
Who obviously drums on all of Noel's records. He was amazing. he's actually a pretty top dude as well. Actually, one of the days we all got chicken burgers. And quite a random story for this one. But and like, we went back downstairs and we sat mixing whatever. And I thought he had went home and he had Eddie's chicken burger. So we paid him for the full day. He was in for an hour doing the drums. He absolutely smashed it. Went upstairs, had a chicken burger and just slept for the rest of the day in the studio. So I thought that's the kind of life that I want to have. We had Mike Rowe who played keys on it. So he played keys in Oasis and plays keys with Noel as well. So he was brilliant. Noel played bass. He also done backing vocals and he done a lead guitar solo. And we also had Paul Stacey as well, who was assistant producer. So it was that was definitely a really good team around that studio.
That is amazing.
It was a good 5 days.
Yeah, those are all people that are like, yeah, massive in like Rowe and Strange Boy Stacey and stuff. Wow, that's really amazing, man. Isn't it?
Absolutely crazy, man. It was I was in total awe of the way they worked. In terms of going in and sitting being an old Gallagher fanboy, I couldn't have done that for 5 days because you would have just seen straight through us, and I would have just looked like I didn't belong there. Do you know what I mean? But in terms of sitting, worshipping the way that they worked, like watching Noel play the guitar, I watched every single movement. And do you know what I mean? Even taking notice of, I mean, I'm not a brilliant drummer, but even taking notice how sort of Jeremy was playing drums and, you know, the keys that Mike was bringing in and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? It was such an educational week, as well as being obviously such a productive one. Do you know what I mean?
Amazing. So, did you guys just do that tune?
Yeah, we did. We had a sort of aspiration of doing more than that, but I think that was going to be the tune that was going to get released. We said that prior. I spoke to Noel on the phone about a week beforehand, and we just went over a couple of things. And we said, listen, if we get time. Because, I mean, the song was virtually done by day three anyway, do you know what I mean? But I think the way that we worked was that, you know, we didn't want to rush anything. We just wanted to take the time with things. If we had an hour spare in the studio on day number two, then it's fine. We just take a chill. We'll have a little rough mix of it. Do you know what I mean? There was no pressure in, right, this has got to be done by 12 o'clock. So I think if there was pressure on that, then, yeah, we might have got two songs done. But Where's My Family Gone definitely wouldn't have been as good as it is. So I'm pleased that we're just concentrated on that one.
That is amazing, mate. And what about, and so once this comes out, obviously you'll do a bit of promotion for this, and then is the plan then to do an album? And are you hoping to get the Noel and the guys back involved in some more recording?
Well, the thing with doing an album is I've always said if the following's not there, then it becomes a little bit of a waste, you know what I mean? Because right. I think anybody can sort of put an album out, do you know what I mean? Anybody can go into a studio and record their best 10 songs and put them out. But if you haven't got a following and stuff behind you and you haven't got the PR behind you, then it's not going to do a lot. So I think a realistic time for an album would probably be 2022, if I'm being honest. But I'd certainly like to get an EP done. Noel seems keen on working with us again, which I'm obviously over the moon about. But we did have... It was good because it wasn't just such a working environment, you know what I mean? It was one of them where, like, we'd sit and talk about Newcastle. I mean, Newcastle got absolutely slated in that studio, but I mean, we'd sort of sit and talk about Mike Ashley and Pep Guardiola, and do you know what I mean? We'd sit and have a laugh at things. So I'm pleased that he's keen to work with us again, and obviously we'll just have to see what the future brings. But I think realistically, I think an EP is going to probably be the next best. Maybe he's after one more single, but an album's in the pipeline. But as I say, maybe he's a couple of years yet.
Fair play. And then what about actual, you know, because obviously you're, you know, quite a bit younger than the typical kind of Oasis fans like me, just like 40 odd. But like, so what's your, like, when did you first get into Oasis or hear that? Was that a big band for you sort of as you first got into music?
Yeah, well, I'm very much like a lot of kids, I suppose. You listen to what your dad listened to, do you know what I mean? So I was brought up on a mix of the Beatles, the Stones, the Who, the Jam, Oasis, the Roses, the Lars, do you know what I mean? So I stuff like that was always playing in our house. And I was always an avid fan of that type of music, do you know what I mean? From being a young kid, but it was just, I was a fan of the tune. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't bothered about who Liam was or who Noel was. Do you know what I mean? At that point, I was a kid and you'd listen to something like Roll With It. Do you know what I mean? And you'd think, oh, it's quite upbeat. And then you'd put on a Stone Roses song and you think, oh, well, I love that as well. But I just like the odd tune, do you know what I mean? And then as you get older, then you start to divulge a little bit into more music, don't you? And you discover B-sides and all that kind of stuff. And by the age of 13, 14, I was absolutely obsessed with that. I was obsessed with the whole band thing. But obviously, I couldn't play the guitar at all. I wasn't a singer. I wasn't the best writer. I was more interested in... don't know how suitable this is for a podcast, but at that age, I was more keen on, you know, going to school halfway through the day stoned, hopping the fence, do you know what I mean? Going to pinch a couple of bacon sandwiches from the school sort of cafeteria, going around my mate's house drinking. Do you know what I mean? I was one of them. I had no intention of ever doing anything in music. And I suppose something just changed, something clicked when I was about 17. But I was always an Oasis fan. I was always a fan of music along those lines.
No, that's brilliant. And what about Noel's like solo stuff? Because as I say, you can hear this, like, to me, as soon as I heard that bit of Where's My Family Gone, it was like, that sounds like a Noel Gallagher High Flying Birds. This sounds like, especially Chasing Yesterday, his second album. Is that something that you've sort of actively sort of followed his then solo career and those sort of tunes?
It's I think in terms of that song, you're not the first person to say that it sounds like something off Chasing Yesterday. It's I mean, it's got Noel written all over it, especially the production. In terms of writing now, yeah, I mean, I've been a massive fan of Noel. I'm probably more so a fan of Noel's solo stuff than I am of Oasis' stuff, in particular the first two albums, but I mean, even the third album's great. But I've got a lot of songs that I've kept back. I've got a song called Why You that my manager insists on telling us it's just If I Had a Gun over and over again. so that's great. But I've got a lot of songs that I've not necessarily ripped off or anything, but I've got a lot of songs that I've modelled off artists such like Noel, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of music that I listen to and I'll think, well, I want my guitar to sound like that. Not necessarily steal the chords or anything, but just how I'll obsess with the sound of a guitar on a recording. And even if it takes us to ring an engineer and say, listen, will you listen to These Streets by Paolo Nutini and just tell us what you've done or what somebody would have done to get his guitar sound like that. Do you know what I mean?
Got you.
So if I was ever to go back in the studio again, I mean, I've always loved the acoustic sound on Noel's tracks, in particular the first album.
So,
I suppose the next time I go in the studio, it'll be along the same lines of Where's My Family Gone. I think we've set the mark pretty high now. So it's definitely not worth dropping.
No, fair play. And then with this, are we hoping to get like mainstream radio play? I suppose it's difficult because these days Radio 1 is very, very sort of dance music and hip hop based. But then would Radio 2 play like a 20-year-old? So it's a tricky one to get out there and market yourself, I suppose, in this sort weird landscape.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're right what you're saying. It is a tough one. We've just got to hope that with team behind the scenes do well enough to get it on the radio. I mean, we've got a great team. Obviously, we've got the label there. Mm. I mean, it's a label that it's a label that sort of Lewis Capaldi signed to. It's a label that Jake Bugg was signed to for his first two albums or first three or whatever it was. So there's no doubt in my mind that they can do a good job with the track. We've got a great PR team. We've got a good radio plugger. So we've just got to hope that it gets the coverage that it deserves, because even if this wasn't my track and I had just heard it, this song's made for radio, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
We've got a great... I mean, the track that you'll hear on Friday it's just over 4 minutes, but even the radio edit of it is absolutely brilliant, do you know what I mean?
Where's my family gone?
we've just got to hope. But I mean, it's with I know it's with Radio X, I know it's with a couple other radio stations, I kind of think off the top of my head, but everyone's pushing for it to be in the right places. We've just got to hope that it materialises.
Nice one. Quality, mate. Well, look, I wish you all the best with it, and you know, very jealous to be literally with your first or, you know, one of your first ever gigs, to then, just because the guy you coach football with happens to have found Noel's guitar. That is an amazing story. Yeah, that is an incredible story.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. It's a funny one. Like, it is a funny one. But yeah, hey ho.
Yeah.
I suppose the funniest stories are the best, aren't they?
No, well, it's absolutely. You need, everyone needs a break. And like, as I say, coming from something like that. But as I say, you know, it's luck. But you don't get that luck if you haven't got the skill. If you haven't got the, I'm sure if your song wasn't great, Noel would have been, you know, Noel doesn't do people favours for the sake of it. You know what I mean? He would only do it if he really thought it was good. And they are, they're great tunes. So, no, I wish you all the best with it, and stay in touch, and we'll hopefully, speak again.
Yeah, thanks very much, man. I appreciate the time.
No worries. I tell you what, we always finish with the, like, Oasis song or solo song of the guest choice, and one that means a lot to you. So is there a particular song that you want to finish with?
I'm going to say Broken Arrow from Noel's solo career, because of the reason it is my little sister's favourite song ever, in particular by Noel, and she loves it, absolutely loves it, and it's an absolute tune, so I'm going to say that one.
Wonderful. And good question. Thank you so much for your time, man.
No worries, man. Thank you very much. Fallen angel, the broken arrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, so welcome back to the Oasis podcast, Richard Bowes. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a bit tired from all this, like, this mad kind of week we've had. You know, like, a band that's been gone for how many decades, and then it's like, oh yeah, like, the Oasis podcast has got loads of new stuff to talk about. And like I said on Twitter, like, you wait for months and months and months for, you know, music involving Liam and Noel Gallagher. And then, like, four tracks come along at once in the same week that we've got this massive 25th anniversary with all this other stuff and an album from Andy Bell. And it's like, whoa, I need to talk to someone about this. And, you know, and I couldn't find anyone better. So it's you, Richard.
Always willing and available. it's been a bit of a blitzkrieg, isn't it, the last week or so? I think it seemed that Ignition were quite late to the party. Well, sorry, not Ignition, but it seemed that they were quite late to the party in kind of setting up the More Than Glory 25 stuff. But then, actually, as it transpired, they'd actually did have quite a lot that they kept under wraps. And then we were kind of, what with all the other kind of external celebrations that were going on as well, I've had to spend some time catching up with it, because I haven't been able to keep up with it as it's happened. It's been mad. But I mean, I think most impressive is always the fact that I think that, you know, More Than Glory is now number 3 in the charts again.
Crazy. Yeah, I know, it's madness. You know, I completely agree. If you remember, we were sort of saying, weren't we, like, come on, guys, like, are you actually going to do anything for this? And then all these things suddenly drop out of nowhere. Like, you know, I mean, it's a funny one, because it's the actual amount of content they've generated on YouTube. I mean, that appears to have been their primary focus, is generating stuff on YouTube. Has been quite a lot, but then most of it has obviously been culled from this literally 1 or 2 days that Noel had there. You know, they've just sort of they've just done that filming and then they've managed to sort of dole it out over a number of different bits, which makes sense because, you know, if you put everything out in one go, then most people would click that once or twice. Whereas actually, if you dish that out over, you know, a number of different videos, then you're going to generate that many more clicks and that many more advertising revenue. So it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, they started slow with the kind of the remastered videos. You know, I think running the risk of offending people, I don't think that's really, you know, that's quite niche, isn't it? I think for any kind of, you know, I think you have to be a bit more appreciate the technicalities of remastering videos and spruce them up rather than a waste fan to really view them. I mean, they're fine for what they are, and similar to with the kind of the lyric videos they do, it's kind of like, yeah, they're fine. Inessential, I would say, but certainly the more recent stuff they've come up with, as you say, the Noel interview and all the various Noel pieces have definitely been worth watching, some more than others. I would say the Noel answer your questions thing are a bit by numbers. I think if you're not a fair weather fan, I think especially looking at some of the questions, you know, it's, you know, what's your favorite song, what's your happiest memory, and there's a lot of repetition. Like if you watch some of the first Rockfield documentary, you know, the one he did, and then the track by track, there's a lot of repetition in those Noel answer your question things. But you know, that's part of the course, isn't it? I guess that's part of the game. It's all quite, you know, quite simple stuff that Noel will probably be able to recall as well, because, you know, his memory, as he wants to admit, his memory isn't the best when it comes to recalling incidents and so on and so forth. But no, it's definitely been quite a few good little nuggets of information that we've managed to extract over the past few weeks. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, you know, because it was, what, 12 full days, you know, there was only 12 days or whatever. So, like, you know, yeah, there is only 12 days worth of memories, other than, you know, obviously the memories of writing it or whatever. So, you know, that there is such a small amount of time, and they just went in and did it. So, you know, unless you've got someone that's really a good storyteller and is able to, you know, really like tell a ripping yarn about the ins and outs of a certain day, there isn't that much to say about it. You know, they weren't, you know, I know there's a bit of filming and stuff, but, you know, they just did it, didn't they? So yeah, there is a lot of that repetition. But yeah, I mean, the Rockfield doc, I did really enjoy that. I think, like I said, I think I said it on Twitter, the downsides, and also I've interviewed Nick Bryan, who was featured quite heavily on that, and it's the point I made to him as well. One of the downsides, I thought, what I really would have loved was Noel at the console with Nick, or even if they'd got Owen Morris over, and, you know, just actually going up and down on the faders and like the old VH1 classic albums, you know, actually, you know, oh, let's hear the isolated vocal on here, or let's hear the isolated strings on here. That would have been really cool. But didn't happen. You know, they obviously, like, the master tapes are somewhere in the Ignition offices or in Noel's house or whatever. That would have been great to hear Noel or Owen, you know, actually twiddling the knobs, but didn't happen, which is a bit of a shame, I thought.
I agree. But it's also quite interesting in that, you know, you and I have had this conversation quite a few times, and I've you've mentioned it on the podcast quite a bit. There must be stuff in the vaults, you know, an Oasis anthology kind of outtakes or material or, you know, different versions. But in the case of Morning Glory, it's just not the case, is it? They went in there, did it 12 days. Noel admits, you know, he didn't write, he hadn't finished half the songs, which doesn't correlate with the stories that were hanging around, that were around at the time, because Noel apparently had this huge backlog of tracks. Now the story slightly changed over the 25 years. But, you know, I don't think, that, you know, there's two versions of Roll With It. One would imagine they're much the same. You know, it seemed they were kind of bashing out quite quickly, which doesn't really bode well for future kind of reissues of Morning Glory. I think, in a sense, it's going to be, you know, the deluxe version that was released in 2014, you know, the B-sides and various live outings is probably as good as it's going to get in terms of extra material, just by virtue of the fact there wasn't any. You know, you might get some really, really niche stuff, but it just seems they were just a very efficient machine in rolling out the tunes at the time. But yeah, I agree. It would have been nice to have them kind of going a little bit more down memory lane, in terms of, like you say, hearing all the isolated tracks, you know, for example, the Liam Champagne Supernova bit that's in Supersonic. That's the point as well. Noel's very complimentary about Liam's voice about the whole thing, which, I mean, is obvious, it's undeniable. But it's nice to see him be, you know, quite well, relatively gushing in his praise for Liam's voice and the rest of the band as well.
I understood it today. In other words, the melodies. Liam's voice is fucking on another level on that record. Because there's nothing around today that's even remotely fucking comes near to it. Another sunny afternoon, walking to the sound of my favourite tune. Tomorrow never knows, but it doesn't know too soon.
Yeah, no, I think so. That was really nice. I mean, like, it is just nice to hear Noel talking about Oasis. Like, you know, for a while he didn't really very much. So, you know, for him to be going back there and revisiting it and talking about how great that band was and how great that album is. And, you know, like he said, it's like, oh, it's the first time I've listened to it for 25 years or whatever. Like, yeah, that was just really lovely. I think that the other points I had on it were that it was a shame the other band members weren't involved, but I can completely understand that. You know, Alan White has only just kind of come back into the public sphere, but just doing a bits and pieces on Instagram. Boned and Liam are a little unit, and so it's like, well, would Boned do something without Liam being involved? And he's probably unlikely to get Liam involved because of the fact that Ignition and Noel are sort of on the same team. And then Griggs, obviously, we don't doesn't do anything. So Owen Morris is over in Costa Rica at the moment, so he's unlikely to come back for it. So it's a shame that they weren't involved, but ultimately I think that it wasn't, this is the story of Morning Glory. This is the absolute, like the definitely maybe sort of documentary they did that was all away from the, you know, from the history of the band. It wasn't an overall overarching documentary. It was Noel Returns to Rockfield. And so for that, I thought it was fine. I thought it did what it really needed to do. And I thought that the only other criticism I had of it was that he told some great answers, and similar to the song breakdowns as well, but it really lacked someone being there who knew their stuff, doing follow-up questions and asking a bit more. If me or you had been there, or if someone, you know, just someone that's a big Oasis fan had been there, just sort of digging a little bit deeper, you know, onto those individual bits and pieces then. And that's where maybe having the master tapes would have come in as well, because you could have like gone, oh, let's listen to the isolated, you know, rhythm guitar track on here. Like, oh, why did you do it that way or whatever? And that would have been really good, I thought. But, you know, it wasn't. It was very much, you know, the questions were being asked off screen and then Noel was answering them in the way he wanted to without any kind of follow-up or challenge, which was a shame, but, you know, I don't think we were likely to get anything other than that, to be honest.
No, absolutely not. And one part of the videos that I did was quite frustrating on the track by track, is they went into the B-sides. I thought, oh, good, you know, we might get some insight into the B-sides, the lesser-known stuff. And then it was just like, it became ostensibly talking about, I think it was It's Better People, I think they started off talking about, and then it just rolled off the rest. And it was kind of, they all kind of got covered in the same kind of track. And it was like, you'd like to know a little, I mean, if nothing else, you'd like to know, you know, who was in the studio for the Come Up With The Noise, you know, who had that bit to the end, why they chose that song, you know, why Noel chose Step Out, you know, why he got to sing that, you know, a bit of insight about Round Our Way, for example, or indeed even the Swamp Song, you know, Noel just, you know, when they mention the excerpt, when they're covering the excerpts, Noel goes, oh, it was just a little mess around the studio, that was it. It's like, okay, it wasn't really worth bothering with, was it?
I don't know why it's called the Swamp Song. It was just a thing we would fuck around with. Comes in and out at a couple of points in the record. I was like, wow, that's fucking hell.
Yeah, it was interesting to know that, I mean, I may have heard this story before, but it was interesting that he wrote It's Better People like after they finished, and they were just and they were all getting ready to leave, and then he kind of dragged everyone back in and said, I've got another B-side. I thought that was a good insight into kind of how it was at the time.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And there were a few more nuggets as well. There was some, you know, it's great. It's any little nugget of information is sort of worth grabbing onto, isn't it? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah, there's the whole, like, I don't know if we had heard that story before, like recording Wonderwall sitting on the wall. That was really nice. And then the fact that, you know, you can physically hear it. I think, you know, that like the little bit at the start Yeah, you can hear the birdsong at the end as well. So, you know, that I don't know if that had been, it probably had been covered before, but it was just really good to get.
No, I didn't know it though.
Did you know? Well, if you didn't know it, it probably hadn't been. But, yeah, it was good to get that bit of insight into that, I think. And, you know, it's just so nice to see him sort of sitting up on the wall and, you know, with Nick there. It was good.
Yeah, it's a nice mental image, isn't it? Of him just sort of sitting outside in the freezing cold on a wall with an acoustic guitar just being grumpy before writing the most, well, you know, a song that's just had a billion streams on Spotify. It's quite a nice little image of how it might have been.
Yeah, that's crazy as well. A billion streams on Spotify has just happened to Wonderwall. That's mad.
Mm. And what so far ahead as well. I think Don't Look Back in Anger is on about 300,000.
300 million.
300 million, sorry. Yeah. 300 million. Which is, I mean, obviously Spotify is worldwide, and Don't Look Back in Anger seems to be a unique place in Britain, especially. You know, I've said this before, it's basically our national anthem. Or the national anthem for anyone born from, you know, like 1977 onwards. But it's, yeah, it's, I mean, Wonderwall, I think it's what, second only to Bohemian Rhapsody from like songs from the 20th century that have, yeah, hit the billion mark. Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? I mean, it's that song, you run out of superlatives and run out of ways to describe the song. It's just ubiquitous and will certainly outlive us all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good. All right. And then as safe. So that was, I really liked that song breakdown. I completely agree with you. Like it, as it started off, and I think you've started talking about Rocking Chair and you're like, oh great, we're going to go song by song. And then it was just as they just did then reel them off. And it was cool to hear him reel them off, like to, you know, to acknowledge how great those were. But yeah, it would have been nice to him actually to, you know, get a bit more on each one.
Rocking Chair was done in these sessions. I remember being here last. Everyone had gone and our crew were packing the gear away and me and Owen were doing the rough mixes. I remember sitting in here and writing It's Better People in about 10 minutes and just going, I have to stop everybody, unload the gear, get it all back here. And Owen's going, I've just written this song and recorded it in about an hour. So that was done here. Step Out was done here. But things like The Master Plan, you know, Wonderwall was going to be a single. We're a track short, we need a B-side. And I would go away and write a B-side. It turns out that at that time, everything that I wrote was amazing. And possibly The Master Plan might have been the last of the great, fucking great, culturally significant songs that I wrote. But I kind of like the fact that there's B-sides that should have been A-sides that should have been on the album. I like it. And I wish fans would stop going on about it. Because that makes Oasis what they are, is the fact that, you know, you don't just get to sit and listen to it on an album. There's about another 12 tunes that you might have to fucking go looking for. Like Listen Up, Talk Tonight, Head Shrinker, The Master Plan, Acquiesce, fucking Rocking Chair, It's Good to Be Free, Fade Away. You know, there's 10 straight away, do you know what I mean? That were good enough to launch any band's career. We'll dance if they wanna dance,
please, brother, take a chance. You know they're gonna go which way. But there you go. Any other nuggets that you picked up from any of those bits?
From those, just Noel's kind of what seemed to me to be frequent omissions, and maybe I just watched the videos a couple of times, but he was, again, going back to the, you know, there aren't second verses for half the songs, which has always been a bit of a bone of contention for me, because it's, you know, you just imagine how good Cast in Shadow would be with a second verse, for example, or indeed Morning Glory itself. But then I think Noel makes this point, you've offset that with Hey Now, which has got loads of lyrics. It's just, you know, it now kind of makes sense that it was, you know, that he was kind of still writing as they were in the studio. Yeah. And you know, it's, as I say, It's been frustrating, but it's nice to at least acknowledge that, not, or at least Noel acknowledging it now. You know, obviously back in the day it was more of a case of that'll do, you know, whereas now he's a bit more professional and more experienced, and, you know, I sense if he could go back and put in second verses he would, but you know, such as it is. But no, it was this, yeah, as you say, just kind of good. What I mean, terrible jacket that Noel was wearing, I've got to say. it was a nice little treat.
Good. All right. And then the Q&As. One of the things I thought was interesting, I haven't watched, I think by the time of this recording, I think they've released four, and they might have released a fifth one today. I'm not sure.
I haven't seen it.
No, I think there was also, I've just seen like a Wonderwall lip syncing video has just dropped as well, which I don't even remember them talking about getting a Wonderwall lip syncing video. But anyway, that's happened. I haven't even watched it yet. I just saw it appeared. I, to be honest, like the last one, the fourth of six of the fan questions, I watched on mute with subtitles on, just because right. I was in the middle of doing something else, and I was like, I don't really need to listen to this. I'll just read it and see if anything. I think I was listening to music actually, and I thought, well, let's just put this on. I'll just read the questions because I kind of guessed from the first three. What's been really nice is the fact that they have been focusing on lots of different people from all around the world. Because it's a really global band and a global album, and I think we kind of forget that. We get caught in our little kind of UK bubble, but yeah, this is a massively important global band, so it is really nice to see people from all these different countries asking questions. But you know, when the questions are, you know, and the little girl was cute, you know, which favorite song, and oh well, it's Champagne Supernova because that's your favorite, okay, you know, but whatever. I'm not here for the cuteness, Richard. I'm here for the information nuggets, and if you're not going to give me information nuggets, forget it.
Yeah, keep your fan pleasing. But similar to that as well, it's interesting to see how many young people there were as well.
Yeah,
you know, and Noel often makes this point, you know, and it's obviously borne out by the facts again, the album being number three and continuing to sell by shitloads. It's people will still keep coming back to it, you know, and indeed those younger people. It's nice to see, you know. I mean, obviously makes me, and I imagine you and a lot of us, feel very, very old. But that's no bad thing. We're getting to that stage. You know, I mean, when I first got into the Beatles, you know, it was the same period of time between when they'd split and when I got into them, which is now kind of where we're at for Morning Glory. So, yeah. You know, that generational thing is going to keep churning. And, you know, I've made this point before. They're up there with, obviously, well, not up quite up there with the Beatles, but, you know, ABBA and Queen, you know, those sort of, yeah. I'd say, though, if they weren't quite so new, they'd be thought of as much the same, you know, the songs ubiquitous, specifically, you know, Wonderwall, Don't Let Back Anger, Champagne Supernova, first three that could live forever. You know, they are up there as kind of part of the establishment, certainly transcendent of indie, of certainly transcendent of Britpop, and arguably transcendent of rock music, really.
Yeah.
You know, they're in that proper top tier now.
I
would imagine a man on the street would know more Oasis songs than he would know songs by, dare I say, the Stones.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'd say
that. I don't think that's unreasonable to say, and it's it never fails to blow the mind.
You know, that's really interesting, that generational thing. I was thinking about the other day, I was watching Beatles Anthology, which is not a surprise for me because I watch it quite a lot. It's just kind of my go-to have on the background thing. And and if you think about it, the Beatles were about the same age that Noel is now when they made Anthology.
Oh,
like
wow.
Early 50s, 53, I think. What,
McCartney? God, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, McCartney was born 42, I think. And that was filmed in, like, well, it was released in 94, so he would have been 52. So Noel now is older than McCartney was then, you know.
Oh, my God.
We're old. Anyway. But anyway, let's stop talking about old stuff then. Like, there is new music happening. There's new stuff. That's one of the things that we really like about the Gallagher brothers. They're not just sitting still and living in the past, but they are moving on to new stuff all the time, and sort of tying in with the Beatles as well. We've obviously had the big John Lennon 80th birthday anniversary this week. And and both Noel and Liam have released music, kind of. So Liam's one was this Andrew Wyatt released a song called Bless You, which is a lesser known Lennon's tune. It's not one I remembered off the top of my head, actually. It's on Walls and Bridges, and I had to kind of go back and listen to it, because Walls and Bridges isn't an album that I have on sort of rotation. And so, but yeah, it's actually a really good song. I remember that, oh yeah, I do like that one, actually. And then, and I really liked Andrew Wyatt's version. I think it was Michael Hart said, you know, Tame Impala. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely got Tame Impala vibes. And so you've got Andrew Wyatt sings the whole thing, and then Liam just comes in and sings the middle eight. And it's just great hearing Liam sing Lennon. It's just such a perfect fit. And I really liked it.
Yeah, I did too. It's quite a sultry, sexy little number, actually. It's got a kind of little, I don't know, gentleman's club vibe around it. But and Andrew Wyatt's quite, you know, his vocal deliveries, quite kind of yearning. But then, yeah, you're right. When Liam comes in, obviously he's based his career on him, so it shouldn't be a surprise. But Liam singing Lennon is a perfect fit, similar to when he did, or when BDI saw it did Across the Universe.
Yeah,
you know, it was just that. Yeah, that fits perfectly. I mean, it does in the course of the song itself. Liam does blow Andrew Wyatt away, I've got to say. You know, Liam just elevates it a little bit, and then when he finishes, he's like, that's a shame. But yeah, I mean, it's hardly a surprise that Liam did some kind of Lennon acknowledgement, but I didn't think it'd be that. Yeah, as you rightly say, it's a choice of song. And you know, a guest appearance, I suppose you'd call it.
Some people say it's over.
But it was a nice little thing, because that was quite early on Friday morning, I think it was released, so that was a good thing to wake up to. And then, yeah, as you say, the day went on, and then we got we got Noel's contribution as well, which I think is beautiful. I think it's gorgeous version of Mind Games.
Yeah, so, but this is the weird thing, right? So that Liam version is, well, is it a single? Because it was, this is like we were talking about before, like in this one weird world we're in. So it's, because that was just on a on Instagram, right? And it's not on Spotify or anything. I don't know if it's on YouTube yet.
It is on YouTube, yeah.
Is it on YouTube now? Okay. So, but does that mean it's a single? I don't know.
Guess is good. Yeah, I honestly have no idea. As we've been talking, I've just been having a look for Andrew Wyatt on Apple Music, and there's nothing on there for that. Yeah, it's only, but there's a video for it on YouTube as well. I mean, I don't know if it's I don't know how official it is, whether it's fan made, I don't know, but I had a look early on, and yeah, it's up there. It's kind of a little cartoony thing.
Oh yeah, no, that was what you put out on his Instagram. So that is definitely the official video for it. But yeah, it's just in this weird world, isn't it? Well, does that count as a single or not? You know, I don't think it does if you can't physically buy it or stream it on a music platform. No, it probably doesn't. But anyway, weird. But that's weird. But then we get like Noel, who only releases, it's obviously a full version, but then we just get this like 1 minute snippet of it, like being filmed in his studio. Like the first thing to say as well is this, like, as far as I'm aware, this is the first we've seen into Noel's new studio, which is cool. And it looks like nicely decked out. It looked like you had a Pep Guardiola cardboard cut out in the corner, which was cool. And there was little figurines in the foreground. I don't know if that was like the Beatles. I think it might have been the Beatles. So yeah, generally that looked like a lovely sort of studio to hang out in. But yeah, that's by the by. I thought it was really, really nice. I thought it was very similar. I didn't think it was reinventing the wheel from the normal version of Mind Games. And as I say, we only heard one sort of 1 minute snippet, but you know, Noel sang it beautifully, I think, and yeah, I think it sounded really good.
He's gonna walk away with no man, yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there was the Sun are now reporting that Noel's doing a covers album. Maybe that could be from a combination of the Mind Games thing, the Matt Morgan podcast. The Enemy's now reporting on it as well. How true that is, time will tell, I guess. Wait, actually, is it? It might have said maybe it's part of a John Lennon covers album, which to me suggests even lazy reporting.
Yeah.
But as you say, who knows what that'll transpire? But there's been a couple of photographs. I think there's one photograph of Andrew Cushing in Noel's studio, and when Matt Morgan did his most recent podcast, he took a quick picture of Noel's studio when he was in there. So I've seen a couple, but that's the first time I've seen it in live action. It does look, it's by all accounts, apparently it's from what they said, it's a great place, and Noel's obviously very much home there. Interesting that he seems to be cracking on as well. I think he, in the latest Matt Morgan interview, he backtracks a little bit from what he was saying about having tracks finished in a previous episode. I think he's now kind of, we're kind of nearly there with a few things. So he may be playing it down, but then he seems to be doing a lot of collaborative work. You know, I think it's to be confirmed, but it seems very likely that he's done the track with Dizzy Rascal.
Yes. Yeah.
Jury will be out on that one, I think, until it's heard. I think I can't hear Noel's vocals, presuming it's vocals, I can't hear Noel's vocals working with Dizzy Rascal, but then I don't know Dizzy Rascal's newer stuff, so I'm not a huge follower of him, so time will tell with that one, but it should be interesting at the very least.
Well, like when we did our collaborations episode recently, it was like, you know, he can bring something, can't he, whether he brings like a chorus and then you've got Dizzy Rascal rapping around it, or whether it's more he'll just play guitar, or like going back to the Beatles as well, I remember when Paul McCartney did a tune with like Kanye West, and it was basically he just played a little riff and Kanye just said, yeah, that'll do, and he just took that and like made the whole track out of that. So you don't know. I'm interested to hear it. That's the key thing. Like any of these things, I'm always interested to hear them, whether or not it becomes a regular, you know, listen, probably not, but you know, it is good he's trying to do something different.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank God we didn't do the solo career collaborations chat, because we'd be well out of date by now.
Well, there we go. Yeah, well, that's it. We'll have to wait until all these bits and pieces come out, and then that could be the spur for part two. There you go. But where were we? So we've done the Lennon's. I forgot all about that Dizzy Rascal. There's been so much news. Like, that's crazy. But yeah, there was that. Obviously, yeah, there's the tune he's done with Andrew Cushing. And so I will have dropped in the interview I did with Andrew Cushing earlier today, which you obviously haven't heard yet, but it was really interesting. And and he's just, you know, how lucky for this kid to be plucked from obscurity on this sort of really, you know, really sort of bizarre story that is, it is this guy who happened to have found a bag for Noel like 20 years ago or whatever, then becomes a manager. And it's just such a crazy story. But, you know, I'm just really happy for him. And by the sounds of it, this tune just sounds like a Noel Gallagher song. It just sounds big and epic. And obviously at the time of recording, we've only heard the little snippet, but you know, with that combined with the fact we've heard the song before on the, like This Feeling TV. So I'm aware of how the song is. And then just with that sort of background, but like I let you know earlier, like Mike Rowe, Jeremy Stacey, Paul Stacey and Noel, like, well, it's going to sound like the High Flying Birds, isn't it? When you've got that sort of that amazing backup of these, you know, long tried and tested Noel collaborators.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. As you say, from that little snippet we've heard, the first thing I thought was Chasing Yesterday. You know, it's very much, it's like from the, I don't even know how long the clip is, 16, 17 seconds. It could only, like I said in the previous episode about Proud Mary, it sounds like that could only be Noel, if not on guitars, then certainly on production. Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, a slightly speedier version of The Dying of the Light or River Man. You know, it's again, we'll see what happens with the song itself, but it will. It's certainly aiming for the Noel Gallagher demographic, I would think. And good on him. You know, Andrew Christian's version of Dead in the Water is great as well.
I've been thinking about the days when we had no money. That photograph of you, well, it still seems funny. Trying to get back to the promised land. So don't walk away, love. There's never enough that can make me crash on the broken glass. Let the storm rage. I die on the waves, but I will not rest while love lies dead in the water.
Yeah.
And as you say, you know, it's a dream come true for something like that. Well, you know, for many of us, it would have been. Is Andrew Christian on Creation 23? Do you know?
No, he's on EMI.
Okay. Oh right, okay. So he's got a full deal then.
Yeah, no, he's got a full deal. He's getting properly pushed. You'll hear it on the episode. But I sort of said, you know, well, like, good luck. You know, are you hoping to get radio play? Because I suppose the tricky thing is for like a 20-year-old, you know, Radio 1 isn't really playing kind of music that sounds like, you know, Noel Gallagher sort of music at the moment. But then Radio 2, would they play a 20-year-old? You know, where's it going to fit? And he was like, well, we've got the label, we've got the PR, we've got the record, we've got the radio plugger, we've got this, you know, we've got a really good team. I was like, bloody hell. Okay, this is not just a kid that's, you know, jammily got Noel. This is like a serious, serious thing where there's a record company behind him that are proper pushing this. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next year, Andrew Cushing is up there with your Lewis Capaldis and Declan McKenna and Sam Fender and stuff, because it really does sound like he's getting the push.
Okay, so kind of made for Radio X.
Yeah, absolutely. Radio X, absolute. You know, there's plenty out there, I suppose. I tend to think one, or Radio 1, Radio 2, but you know, there are other avenues, I suppose. Yeah. There we are. And what was the other one? Camel Fat. Yeah. So once again, we haven't heard the whole thing yet. I think the whole thing comes out on the 30th. But I personally, like, I think it's good. It didn't really grab me, to be honest. Like, I think a lot of his, you know, I'm not a massive fan of dance music and some of that sort of housier kind of dance with Noel's vocal on it. I thought it was good. I look forward to hearing the full tune, but sort of similar to like the remixes and things that we've had of his more recent stuff. It didn't sound like completely different. You know, it felt much more in line of this sort of more recent direction of these last couple of EPs, I thought. But what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think this one's been in the offing for quite a while, because Camel Fat have been kicking around for a few years. I think they did a track called Cola 3-4 years ago, which kind of was kind of their, I don't want to say breakthrough, but you know, their first step on the ladder. And that caught Noel's attention, because I remember him speaking about it in a video for the Who Built the Moon promotion, I think it was. That's been, I think, from what I can make out, he praised them and then they got in contact with him. I mean, that album, I've got the album kind of on pre-order, and it's got an impressive collection of collaborators, actually, because they've already released a single with Jake Bug on it. They've released one with Yanis from Foles.
Yeah.
And they've got a couple of others. In terms of that track itself, I liked, if you can call it, what the verse, and I can't remember, kind of off the top of my head now, but I like some of the lyrics and the ideas in the verse. But when the chorus / drop, to use the dance vernacular, comes in, yeah, I was a bit like, okay, that is a bit generic. But I think it would be, you know, I think it would be quite, it would probably sound great in a club. Not that we can do that, but you know, it probably sound good in the correct environment. And I imagine it'd be a bit of a beast when it's actually done live. But yeah, similar to, I think it will. It's hard to gauge from the how much we've had of it, but I like it. And I like the more electronic stuff that Noel does. Yeah. So, and similarly, I've made this point before, you know, it's nice to see him pursue that, which, you know, would have been nice to him to, or when he could have gone the dance route, you know, when he all kind of alluded to the electronic route, it's nice to see him follow that through. And yes, so again, I think I'm pleased with it. I mean, it's just nice, as I say, it's just nice to see, kind of see him back in the ring. It feels like things are happening again. Do you know what I mean? It feels like, not with the studio now, but like the world's in motion for some more. I mean, he's, Noel, I think at the beginning of the year, was saying he was going to take quite a long break and build his studio and so on and so forth, and maybe not release any music. But I think the lockdown seems to have changed his mentality. And going back to the Matt Morgan podcast, he's kind of said something along the lines of, you know, we need to get music out there. We need to try and cheer people up. So it sounds like he's maybe upping his workload a little bit. And on a similar vein as well, Liam says he'll have a single ready by Christmas. We'll see. Yeah. But I don't know if you saw anyone, but Liam tweeted that he spent the day with the Ashcrofts.
I didn't see them. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was more, I can't remember the exact wording of the tweet, but it was like, thanks for doing that. Your family's great, or that sort of thing. But, you know, Liam's often mooted doing something with Ashcroft. Maybe.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, he was in the studio before, wasn't he? And then came out. And then I think he was saying he was going back in, this last week. So, yeah, let's hope so. It'd be great to get. And we know, obviously, he's been in touch with Andrew Wyatt because he's done this bit for him. So, yeah, so let's hope so. No, very exciting. Be great to get music.
Sorry,
go on.
I was going to say, you've also got Noel appearing on Charlotte's. I think it's an EP she's releasing next month, I believe.
Yes, yeah, Le Volume Curb EP is going to be on that as well. I think it's end of November that's coming. So, yeah, that'll be exciting. I look forward to hearing that as well. That'll be interesting. Wonder if he's going to return the favour and maybe play the stapler or something. Only office equipment.
Noel and the hole puncher.
Yes, that would be good. No, so yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's good to have them around. It would be good to get these, like, you know, these few bits out properly. It's just a bit weird when it's like new music. Well, kind of, you know. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, and then the other thing, obviously, the massive news is we've had this Andy Bell album. You know, it's good when we talk about Oasis news to have been part of that cycle. And obviously we had Andy Bell on last week, which was very cool. And yeah, it was amazing to speak to Andy. It was just sort of, it's been a long time in the making. Like I might have mentioned on here before, it was a couple of times when it almost happened and then it didn't happen. So it's just one of those things when you're trying to kind of coordinate this with management companies and things like that, but I think this time around it was like, right, okay, well, when it's Ride, it's not really right for Andy to go out there promote, you know, talking about Oasis primarily. That doesn't make sense. But when it's Andy by himself promoting a solo album, well, then that's different. You know, he's not there representing Ride. He's just representing himself. And, you know, and just a bit behind the scenes, they were more than happy for me to ask questions about the Oasis stuff. They wanted me to talk about the new album, and I was very happy to talk about the new album, like, because I really enjoyed it, and it's great to talk to people about the new music. But I was really taken aback about how much Oasis chat I got. You know, there's a couple of stories he told there, like, you can just hear the passion. You can just hear him being so passionate about Oasis, and that was just really, really great to get. You know, and to get the background on the BD. On the gay dad thing, you know, that was good to get a bit more meat on the bones of that. And some bit more on the recording of the individual tunes. I was like really pleased to get a bit more insight into those. So, but was there anything else that stood out for you from that, Richard, from
your interview? I think it was, for me, it was the fact that Thank You for the Good Times was about the situation he found himself in, and, you know, a kind of, you know, cheers of the glass to band members past and present. Yeah. I thought that was, you know, I think you could very easily glean that from listening to it. I mean, I remember thinking at the time, you know, this is on a bit more of a kind of a general way about, you know, life itself, and life is good, and kind of Oasis and the general kind of Oasis vibe. But it was nice that, because it was nice that he did that because he was a fan. So, you know, he was, as he kind of revealed in your interview, he was as much a fan as anyone. Certainly in the, from sort of, you know, 93-94. So similar to what we were saying about Andrew Cushing, to then find, for Andy to find himself in a situation where he's with this band that he's a big fan of, it's it was really nice to hear. And like you say, you could feel the passion, or you could hear the passion coming out from him. When he kind of did that little aside about, he said, "Let's all make believe." His favorite B-sides. You know, you don't think of these people. Do you know what I mean? You don't. Even though we know they're music fans, you don't think of them thinking about music they do in the same way as we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think he would have been much more comfortable spending half an hour talking about Oasis before he joined. He's so enamored with that band, you know, and like I'm asking him about the songs he wrote for Oasis and saying, like, this is, you know, a lot of people hold this up to be one of those great classic sort of B-sides. And he's like, "Oh, no, Let's All Make Believe, that is a tune." And I'm like, wait, we're not here to talk about that, mate. We're here to talk about your stuff. But, you know, that's so cool that he was, you know, he's a true fan. I really love that.
Yeah, that massively. And I'm having lived with the album for a while now, I have to say it gets better every time I listen to it. It's a real grower, I think.
Cool.
As you've been halfway down, I think it's first couple of times you're a bit not taken aback, but it's so kind of laden with effects and it's very trippy, and you think, okay, you know, what more is there? But the more you listen to it, you know, it's actually really diverse as well. And at points it sounds quite right, but then you've got, I think, is it Aubrey Dryden's Gladwell, I think is the name of the song, which sounds, going back to Tame Impala, sounds really like them.
Yeah.
Sounds like very early Tame Impala. And then you've got Skywalker, I think it's Skywalker, that's a bit Beatlesy with the kind of bass lines.
There's a couple that have got that kind of Dear Prudence sort of White Album vibe, definitely. That sort of guitar picking, learnt off Donovan sort of thing.
Yes.
Definitely. I agree. I think that, like, I know what you mean about being taken aback. I was surprised at first because I was expecting like tunes from Love Comes in Wave being really cool and really tuneful with great melody all the way through and a chorus and everything. And then you get into the album and there aren't many big choruses, and, you know, and there aren't many, you know, some of the tracks are instrumental and, you know, and these like long drawn out pieces without like the typical verse chorus sort of stuff that kind of we're sort of built to expect. And so it was like, oh, okay, this isn't like, even the recent Ride albums have been quite, like he said in the interview, they've been quite punchy, you know, which is Ride previously have had, you know, much more sort of drawn out sort of things. And it is in the last couple of years that they have been a bit more, you know, sort of 4-minute pop song kind of thing, rather than these sort of 6-7 minute sort of soundscapes. So it was really interesting that, so I wasn't quite expecting that. So I know what you mean. At first I was like, oh, okay. But then you sort of get past that and just get into the actual sounds and the overall kind of vibe that he's getting at throughout it. And yeah, I really loved it. I know exactly what you mean. I think that there is, I still do, you know, gravitate towards the more tuneful stuff. So like Cherry Cola, I think is fantastic. And that's got like a real beat band sort of vibe to it. That's probably my favorite track on the album. It's funny the things that come into your head, waiting around for the lights to turn red. I wish I was cool or I wish I was dead. I wish I was somebody else instead. Yeah, overall, I just think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he's on such a vein of form at the moment. I mean, yeah, like you say, when Love Comes in Waves came out, I was like, okay, well, that's I personally thought that's quite ridey, you know, but that's to be expected. You know, he's a key songwriter for Ride. But yeah, as you say, the album kind of goes on and it does really diversify, and it's a good mix of everything he's been doing over the last few years. I mean, his output since he left, well, since BDI split, really, is been, I mean, two Ride albums, the Glock album, they've just done Glock's, just, well, he's released another EP in the name of Glock a matter of weeks ago at the same time as his solo album. You know, he's on such a rich vein of form, and long may it continue. It'd be interesting to see how he kind of balances, but I guess interesting to see what the response to this album is and how he kind of balances that with Ride. But I think, you know, I think Ride's touring plans were very much halted for this year. But then even then, I remember reading that, there was another album planned before the last Ride album, This Is Not a Safe Place, that he had it, that they had in mind, but they end up going recording This Is Not a Safe Place kind of ad hoc because it's quite short and punchy, I think.
Mm.
So there's potentially still a lot more to come from him. And you know, good on him. You know, it's great to see, and he's, you know, he's earned his chops. He's a quality songwriter in his own right, as has been proven. And yeah, the more the better for me. But yeah. That's true of any kind of ex-Oasis member, but yeah, the more the best for me. And it's been I think probably the certainly the most pleasant surprise out of the Oasis split is everything that Andy's done since, I would say.
Absolutely. Just selling on the Ride stuff, like, because there's those EPs as well, there was those non-album EPs, so that's all the extra stuff as well, isn't it? But like when he said it was like the death of Bowie hit him, and he thought, I'm not going to hang around. I've got to get on with it. But how frustrating when he was like, yeah, talking about the Turn Up the Sun demo and talking about all these demos. Yeah, I'm making demos all the time. Like, can you just send me them, please? But he's like, oh, it's like how I feel about the Beatles. I want to hear everything. Well, you don't feel about the way about Oasis? Well, no, it's a bit different when you're in the band. I'm like, oh, mate, come on. But yeah. Anyway, there you go.
Yeah, it's understandable. But for him, as they say, he's not in the band. But you know, he needs to remember his fan roots.
So yeah, and then with part of the Morning Glory celebrations as well, there's been a few covers and other bits and pieces. Miles Kane did like quite an interesting version of Hey Now, very kind of glam rocky, which really confused me at first because I thought, well, Hey Now's not like a stompy kind of glam rock tune. But then when the vocals come in and when you come through the chorus, actually, I think it really worked in a weird way.
Yeah, I did too, actually. I was sent it at first, then I was like, I'm not really having that. Wasn't really feeling it. But then gave it another listen, and yeah, the glam kind of thing works. I mean, I don't know if you've watched the video, but
he's rowing a boat, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for a bit of air guitar, you know, when you're at a gig. But when you're in a video, your own video doing a bit of air guitar, I'm not sure about that, Miles. But you know, he's a snappy dresser, he gets away with it. But yeah, I thought it was a cool little version. Interestingly and similarly, I don't know if you. Well, you would have seen it, but Hot Press did a sequence of covers by Irish bands of Oasis songs.
Yes, yeah. The only one I was aware of was the Clockworks doing Some Might Say, just because they, you know, obviously I follow them on Twitter. I'm still in touch with them. I thought it was good, but I was a bit, you know, obviously it's like a lockdown, just a very basic acoustic version, which I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest. I think it's fine. They play it fine and they sing it fine. Obviously it's a great song, but like I've said on here, I prefer when someone's going to do a cover version, I suppose, because we just get inundated doing this podcast. I get inundated with sort of straight acoustic cover versions of songs, of Oasis songs. And so I don't really need another straight acoustic version of Some Might Say. I could really do with something like a weird sort of bizarre Afro funk jazz version of Some Might Say. I'd rather hear, you know, but I thought it was fine for what it was.
Some might say we will find a brighter day. Some might say you made no preparation
Did you hear that, or was there any other interesting ones to check out?
Well, this is what I was going to say, actually, and kind of what I was going to start with the Miles Kane stuff. The covers are generally very faithful, which makes you think how coincidentally Oasis they are, and therefore they can't be anything else. You know, I think, I mean, a lot of them, a lot of the time, and certainly in Miles Kane's case, you know, they are just fans, so they're not going to do a wildly different interpretation. But there's a version of, again, it was Hey Now, actually, by a band called Touts, who are kind of some Irish punks who they've got a couple of really good tracks, actually, but their version was a bit more ragged than Miles Kane's. Didn't have quite the machine, the same machine, but it was pretty faithful. And then you've got, there were quite a few other versions, but they were all, I think there's a piano ballad version of Wonderwall, because that's compulsory. Yeah. that has to be done. But there was one other version, I think it's by Somebody's Child, I think they were called, did quite a soft version of Morning Glory, which is quite interesting. It was quite slow and quite drawn out and quite watered down, quite simple. But the rest were all kind of, yeah, pretty straightforward versions of the songs. I think there was a choir did Don't Back in Anger. But yeah, it's just, as I say, it's interesting to me that are the songs so perfect, or are they so perfectly arranged in terms of pop structure that there's not much you can do with them? Or, you know, I find it quite fascinating because, yeah, like you find if you hear acoustics or acoustic covers of Oasis, you're like, yeah, that's okay, but aside from a different voice, what is it really bringing?
Yeah.
Not a huge amount, but, you know, who are we to deny people their kind of ways of celebration? But yeah, not a huge amount that was new, but you know, good exposure for the band in question as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that did you see that? What's the story, Morning Glory, in 3 minutes?
I thought that I heard someone say now there's no time for running away.
Yeah, so Rich Austin performed the entire Oasis album, What's Story, Morning Glory, in 3 minutes. And it's really cool. He's basically, you see that. He's on he's on like a rooftop. And they start the timer going. And then, they do the entire Morning Glory album in 3 minutes, which is really nice. And actually, it's quite interesting because he switches to harmonica a couple of times for like the Swamp Song and things like that. It's good fun. I really liked it, actually. So yeah, it was, I mean, it's sort of a couple of quite, you know, grating sort of transfers between the songs, but that's always going to happen with songs in different keys and stuff like that. But yeah, that was good fun. That's something a bit different.
I did watch this, and yeah, just kind of rattle through them. And yeah, it's all done with great spirit and great gusto, and it's a fun watch, definitely.
Cool. Anything else?
I don't know. Like I say, it feels like we've kind of been bombarded, and I'm very aware that I'm sure there's things we've missed. But I don't think there is from it much new, to be honest.
Let's just do a quick check on Stop Crying Your Heart Out. the only place to get your Oasis news, everyone. Anyway, all right, well, let's leave it then. And so anyway, Richard, what are you up to? What's the latest on the Some Might Say book? Is it still selling millions?
Alan McGee posted a copy of the book on Instagram, so that's all a bit of a spike, which was useful. Done a couple of pieces with Jeff on, he's written a couple of articles about Morning Glory 25 on the Daily Beast, and a new one that came out on Rock Cellar magazine. So it's kind of all good exposure. I'm just very aware that, you know, this, as we enter another lockdown, there'll be a lot of time on my hands, and it's kind of capitalize on it. But it's easy said than done, I guess. But yeah, well, something will something will come my way, and I'll be getting a flash of inspiration, I'm sure.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, and we'll catch up again when there's a load more news to discuss, I imagine. And we do need to do the that second part of our collaborations, don't we? Maybe once all these have officially dropped in whatever way they do, and then there's plenty more to cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Always good to talk.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much.
Cheers, James. Take care.
So thank you very much to Richard for taking the time and going through all that stuff. I hope you guys are enjoying all the amazing new music coming out from the guys at the moment. And why don't you let me know on social media which of the new tracks you've enjoyed the most this last sort of couple of weeks. Right, in Noel's words there, it's not over yet. I thought I'd drop in a couple of other little bits and pieces that have happened in the last sort of couple of weeks. We will start off with Richard, where we've just left off. He recently interviewed James Walsh, the lead singer of Star Sailor, and he took the opportunity to discuss the whole UKOC run-in with Noel Gallagher. So this was really cool. Check out the full article. It's available on Live Forever website, or you can check it out at Richard's own website, which is linked in the notes of the episode.
What was the actual story behind that, the UKOC article, or the how it actually came about?
It was a festival with that we were doing an Oasis run the bill, and I'd read Noel Gallagher had called me a cock in an interview,
right?
Previously, so I took the opportunity to pull him up on it and say like, what that. That was a bit rude, like, what's that about, kind of thing. And he basically ignored me and was like, mate, I don't even remember saying it. Leave me alone, kind of thing.
Right.
And then we thought that was the end of it, and sometime later, Liam came to the dressing room with a couple of bodyguards and was like, where's that lad from Star Sailor? Nobody kind of speaks to my brother like that. it was ridiculous. It was pantomime. And but I've spoke to, we've done a couple of gigs with Liam since.
Okay.
And he's been fine. He's been really friendly and cool. I think they both. He's an incredible frontman, and Noel Gallagher's a superb songwriter. They're both humans.
And I guess, I mean, it sounds like it was all part of the kind of the playground games anyway at the time. But I imagine, but obviously, you know, the fact we're still talking about it was by virtue of the fact the NME probably made a big hoo-ha about it. I mean, how did you feel about the actual article growing a life of its own?
It felt just crazy at the time because it was like, we were definitely a band that was kind of growing in stature and doing pretty well at the time.
Mm.
But that was definitely something that kind of brought us to the attention of like tabloid readers, and it was a pretty kind of crazy time.
So there you go. Remember in those days when, like, you know, you'd buy the NME and actually read interesting stuff about bands having a go at each other. Very cool. Right. Another one from one of our friends, Katie Georgiou, who does the Brilliant Sound Effects podcast, had an absolutely fantastic guest this last week, Steve Lamack, legendary DJ. What a hero he is, Steve Lamack.
And yeah, Katie managed to get a great interview with him. And she started off by talking to him about the Be Here Now anniversary. So that was really cool. So here's a little bit of that.
It was odd, the release of that record. It was the first time a band had become worried about bootlegging on the internet. Really worried. And I remember when they... Because we were promised the exclusive of several tracks from the record on the evening session, and just before, I think on the day that we were about to broadcast the first four tracks from the record, they told us that I had to talk all over the intros and everything because they were mad panicked that people would be recording these and that. But it was the first time, you know, people actually had a real fear that the music would end up online. Up till then, obviously, bootlegging was just somebody might make a cassette of it and sell it on Camden Market. But all of a sudden, there was this global panic beginning to brew. And yeah, so I had to talk all over the, well, I had to talk all over the intros. And when I said, "Oh, I'm not going to do it all over all of them," they eventually said, "Well, we're not going to give you the music then." So, yeah, very strange times.
So there you go. Do make sure you go and check out the rest of the interview on Katie's channel. Just search Sound Effects. Good name. Yeah, there's loads of other really interesting episodes over on Katie's channel, including an interview with me, which was really good fun. And finally, let's just drop a little bit in here of my recent appearance on the Britpop Revival show. So I did a little bit for Britpop Revival for their What's Story Morning Glory special edition. So do make sure you check out Britpop Revival on Mixcloud, or if you actually listen to it live, Phonic FM, or Phonic.fm if you're not in the greater Exeter region, which probably most of you aren't. So yeah, but this was really good fun, and Nick's such a top guy.
So James, you selected Hello as our first track, and also thank you to Stato for that edit. What have you gone for your second track from the album?
So the next one I've gone for is Some Might Say, and I think that it's another one that had a little nugget of info come out that we hadn't heard before. So there's a track called Fuzzy by Grant Lee Buffalo, which was an American band in the early 90s. And I'd never heard Noel say this before, but he sort of flagged up in his interview, yeah, that was a big inspiration for that track. And if you go back and listen to it, it's not a huge amount, but there's the similar guitar riff and there's a bit of similar melody in there. So it's not a wholesale lift like Shaker Maker is, I Like to Teach the World to Sing. But there's definitely elements of it. So that's an interesting fact. People can go and check out Grant Lee Buffalo Fuzzy and do a side-by-side. It is interesting. But yeah, Some Might Say, what an amazing tune that is.
Okay, so up next is Some Might Say. Do stay tuned because we'll be back with James after this.
There we go. I think that will about do it. Thanks so much for listening to the Oasis podcast. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where we post episodes early and we post bonus episodes and all kinds of other stuff over there. So do go and check it out. Do please follow me on social media, Oasis Podcast on Facebook and Twitter, and it's Oasis Pod on Instagram. You can always email me, oasispod@gmail.com. And if you can do a review on iTunes, that's always really, really appreciated. And obviously, you can buy Richard's book, some might say, The Definitive Story of Oasis, in all good bookshops and some rubbish ones. And yeah, you can get the link for that in the description of the episode. All right, really good stuff coming up. We have got Nick Brine, the engineer of Morning Glory. That's going to come up soon. And also we've got Nick Egan, the music video director, who did 6 different music videos with Oasis. So really good stuff to come very, very soon. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.